Okay, you want us to talk again? All right, Father Greeley, say a few more words.
Well, if people have to wait at another station, I've had to wait for tapings, too, so it evens out.
That one is taking now? You sure? Okay, we're on a different machine now. Okay, all I can do, Father Greeley, is to apologize for the technical failure that we had, and I hate to ask you to do this over again because it's going to push us all late, but I did want to talk to you, and I think it's important to cover some of the ground that we covered before. We started because with some questions about your earliest beginnings in Chicago. It was, well, I'll let you phrase it.
Well, I grew up on the west side of Chicago in the Great Depression. My parents were loyal Catholics, but they were not particularly active. They weren't involved in parish affairs at all. I went through the seminary system in Chicago and was ordained in 1954 and assigned to a new parish on the southwest side of the city, which was one of the first college-educated parishes in the diocese. And it was clear that in the wake of the Second World War and the prosperity after it, that the Catholics were making a big shift from the immigrant slum to the upper middle class, professional, suburban type lifestyle. It was a fascinating experience. I began to write about it. Cardinal Meyer sent me to graduate school to become a sociologist so I'd know what I was talking about, and then gave me permission to stay on for a year of postdoctoral training. In the meantime, he died, and the new cardinal had no room for a sociologist, so I remained in the academic life ever since, and have been writing and teaching and doing research now since 1960, so for almost a quarter century.
What were some of the books that you read as a child and a young man?
Well, in my teen years, I was especially fascinated by Joseph Conrad, and also I think I was heavily influenced by the writings of Gilbert Chesterton, Father Brown stories, and also his novels, his fantasy novels. And John Henry Newman, I was deeply impressed by his work. And more recently, Faulkner's had a great influence on me. I mean, I don't think I write like any of those people, but I certainly enjoyed their writing.
How did it turn out that you became a writing priest?
Well, I had actually begun to write even before I went to graduate school. That was mostly... And then since graduate school, of course, I've been publishing sociology and religion. It was all nonfiction with a little bit of poetry occasionally. About 5-6 years ago, I decided on the basis of the sociology of religion we've been doing that storytelling was perhaps the best way to teach religion. In fact, most of human history was the only way religion was taught. Stories around the campfire, stories parents told their children. Jesus was a storyteller. The best parts of the Jewish scriptures, Joseph, David, Moses, are all stories. And so it seemed to me that the novel today was what the stained glass window was in the Middle Ages. It was the most effective way of telling stories to people. So I set out as an experiment, really, to write novels. And I continued to be astonished at how many people read them, and based on the research we've been doing on the novels, how many people really do perceive them as religious parables.
But your first book was nonfiction.
Well, my first book was a book called The Church in the Suburbs, which I did in 1959. The first book, I think, that sort of got notice was The Making of the Popes, which was published in 1979. It was about the papal elections in 1978. The New York Times praised that. I guess when the New York Times praises one of your books, then you officially become noticed as a writer. It was a great story. The papal elections are great drama. And indeed, as I was covering the elections, I thought to myself, it would really take a novel to capture all the romance and adventure and all the emotional content of a conclave. So The Cardinal Sins, in part, was an attempt to tell the story of the conclave, the election of the two popes, from a more dramatic and more emotional point of view than in nonfiction.
You've had some poetry.
I have. I've done a book of poems called Women I've Met, and I've... have a book of Irish-American blessings in preparation. And there is a poem, a sonnet, in the dedication of Lord of the Dance. I like poetry very much. I like to write it. I'm going to try and do more of it in the years ahead.
Father Greeley, I think you touched on this a moment ago, but I'd like to explore it a little further with you. In reaching people through a fictional way, is this the kind of thing that you believe is more effective than a non-fictional approach?
Well, we've done... research on the current paperback, Ascent into Hell. And it's a book that's been bought, I suppose, by about 3 million people. The overwhelming majority of the readers say it's brought them closer to God, it's given them a greater sense of what God's love is, given them greater respect for the priesthood, brought them closer to their church. Only 10% think the sex is steamy, and 68% thinks it's tasteful and delicate. So yes, I would say that it's an extremely effective way of reaching people, much more effective than a Sunday homily or a nonfiction book. And I think Lord of the Dance, which is about Easter, about resurrection, about a new life, a man coming back from the dead, a man who was a prisoner in China for 18 years, will have a similar impact on people.
The steamy sex, Father Greeley, how does a priest research something like that?
Well, the point is that the readers say they don't think it's steamy, only 10%. Mass media, it's in the computers, I think. And every time my name comes up, the computer scans my name, it prints steamy. But in fact, the readers don't think they're steamy at all. They think it's delicate and tasteful and sensitive. And a priest does research on that because a priest, like all members of the human race, has an imagination. Writing isn't experiential. Good storytelling isn't. You don't write about your experiences. You write about the things you imagine. You write about your fantasies. And priests have fantasies. That may shock some people, but, you know, if we are members of the human race, we have fantasies.
Are you familiar with a young priest by the name of Richard Shaw, who is a prison chaplain in Albany, New York? And his book, which is called...
The Year Mary Had Twins, yeah. No, I'm not familiar with either Father Shaw or the book. I know he's called my books garbage, which strikes me as being an interesting thing. But I haven't read his books, and I won't say anything about him.
In his book, of course, he goes into great detail about his breaking his vow of celibacy. But anyway,
well, that's up to him.
That's another view.
In Lord of the Dance, the priest is tempted severely to violate his vow. He does not do so. Finally, in the end, he doesn't do so. And he doesn't do so because Danny Farrell, his boyhood buddy, comes back. And with Danny around, he just can't do anything wrong.
We know that following the publication of The Cardinal Sins, there was a great hue and cry because there seemed to be so many similarities with regard to an impending scandal involving Cardinal Cody. Now tell me a little bit about the fallout from that book.
Well, as Chris Ogden, the Time Magazine bureau chief in Chicago, said, you know, there was a lot of stuff in there that could have been about Cardinal Cody. And I said, Chris, how much? He said, well, three lines. And I think that's a fair statement. But of course, it is interesting that facts should somehow imitate fiction. That 6 months after a book was published, 5 months after it had been on the bestseller list, there would actually be a scandal in Chicago. But in fact, anybody that read the book and read the newspaper scandals would see that they were totally different things. There's some folks in Chicago that hadn't read the book who thought the book was part of a plot to get Cardinal Cody because they knew I didn't like the Cardinal. But it wasn't. In fact, I think if I'd known the scandal was going to break, I would have held the book back because I wouldn't want to have had the two linked. Now, my publishers, of course, were delighted by the fallout because a lot of people bought the book thinking they were going to get the inside story on the Chicago church scandal, and they didn't.
Many people in your books, priests, hierarchy in the Catholic Church, are far from glamorized. Has this caused any problems with your relationship with your peers and superiors in the church?
I suppose they don't like it, but then the New Testament doesn't glamorize the first priests and bishops. It presents the apostles with all their frailties and weaknesses. Peter, a braggart, a loudmouth. James and John, ambitious and violent. Thomas, a doubter. Matthew, a crooked politician. The 11 of them running away when the chips were down. I think, by and large, my priests are more attractive than the apostles are in the New Testament. There's priests who are attractive, and there's priests who are not. There's priests who are good priests, and there's priests who are sloppy priests in the stories. But as long as you take priests from the human condition, that's the way things are going to be.
Let's move on, Father Greeley, to some of your... working habits. You have a condo in downtown Chicago. Is this where you work?
Yeah.
Rather than a parish house?
When Cardinal Meyer assigned me to university and writing work, I was told I could live wherever I wanted. I like rectory living, but it is simply too noisy. There's too many things going on to be able to concentrate. Ideally, I would, if I had my druthers, I would live in a rectory on weekends and do my work in the condo during the week. The novels tend to be word processed, but that's the second phase. The first phase is the much more difficult one of getting the idea. As in Lord of the Dance, the idea of someone coming back from the dead. Danny Farrell, who's been missing for 18 years and is in a prison camp, presumed dead. His 16-year-old cousin, the protagonist of the book, Noel Farrell, is determined that she's still alive. She gets him out of prison. He comes back from the dead. That's the hook, someone coming back from the dead. The hardest part of novel writing is to get that, get the theme you can summarize in a sentence or two. Then I live with the characters and the story, and they ferment in my brain. And finally, one day, I know what's going to happen, and I sit down at the word processor and, working sometimes 16, 18 hours a day, bang out the first draft. That's the hardest, and it's a compulsive exercise. I can't slow down. I have to get the first draft done. And then 8 months, 10 months, 12 months, even a year of revisions. Now, that's the most fun, perfecting the book, throwing in little things that develop the characters and develop the plot. And with a word processor, that's the big advantage of the word processor, is that is the facility with which you can revise. So it may go on a year and a year and a half, but there's different levels of intensity at the different phases of the construction.
And you say you bang this out as many as 16 hours a day, but without an outline.
Well, I have the outline in my head. I know the story and the characters so well I don't need an outline. I listen to them. They may sound a little strange, but I can see them in my imagination. I can hear them talk. I know what they're saying. I may have a biography of the protagonist, the dates of birth and graduation and marriage and the births of children. I may have that, but otherwise the outline is in my head. Maybe towards the end. See, I write the first chapter and then the last chapter, then fill in between. Maybe towards the end I'll outline a couple chapters to make sure that I tie up all the loose ends. But the outline is mostly mental.
In Lord of the Dance, of course, there's a Monsignor Farrell show. Have you ever had anything quite like that yourself?
No, I've never had a TV show.
Would you want to?
Well, I don't know. It might be fun. Nobody's ever asked me. I mean, if someone asked me, I would give it a whirl. But I'm not sure that I'd like to be on the other side of the microphone in dialogues like this.
Of course, you can always go to John Madigan and just do a
day
with him.
My good friend John Madigan, yeah. I think a confrontation between me and John Madigan on television or on radio would be lots of fun. An Irish street brawl. There is a character in Lord of the Dance called Tim Radigan that some people, quite unfairly and quite outside of my intention, think might be based on John Madigan, but I wouldn't dream of doing that.
Has John issued any comments about Lord of the Dance at this point?
Oh, I don't know. I presume he will. Every time I take a breath, John has something to say. When I gave the endowment of the University of Chicago, John had to denounce that. He denounces everything I do. But, you know, when you got to do a commentary every day, I mean, you have to have somebody to attack.
The endowment that you gave to the University of Chicago, apparently you thought for quite a while before you made this decision.
Well, I would have much preferred, Don, to have given it anonymously. I don't like public charities. But there's been so much in the media, and my clerical confreres have been so obsessed with the question of what do I do with my money, that I was persuaded by some of my friends that I had to do at least a couple of things in public, as they said, for educational purposes. So I set up a chair of Catholic Studies at the University of Chicago in honor of my parents, and a lectureship at the seminary at Mundelein in honor of Cardinal Meyer, who was kind of a spiritual father to me. And so now, you know, it's, I suppose it comes to about $1.5 million, you put the two of them together. That may, for a while at least, answer the question, what does he do with his money? Writing the novels hasn't changed my lifestyle. The way I did.
My last question to you, then, what lies ahead for Andrew Greeley?
More sociology, more journalism, more novels, and more priesting. The next series of novels is about Chicago between the 1933 and the 1992 World's Fair. It's a saga, not a chronological saga. It tells the story of those years, some things that happened to different members of a family called Ryan. And the principal character, at least not, he's never the protagonist, but he's the one that holds it together, is a priest named John Blackwood Ryan. He becomes a Monsignor, or Blackie. He's a kind of an American Father Brown, a colorful, whimsical, wise person.
Father Greeley, I'm going to truncate this interview a little bit. Sorry for that, and I thank you very much.
It's nice to be here, Don.
All right.
I think we covered everything.
I think we covered it quicker. So I just
That's always the way the second time.
I just have to apologize for that.
Oh, no.
If you'd sign the book before you go, I'd certainly appreciate it.